Welcome to another Kundalini After Dark session. I'm your host, Brent Spirit, with a very special co-host here with us tonight, Dimple Bindra. If you haven't already, you can check out the conversation that Dimple and I had on our YouTube channel on the podcast, Spiritual Awakening Show, where we unpack a little bit about her journey. Very fascinating story. She's got a lot of personality, a lot of experience. So we'll find out a little bit about some of the big themes in Dimple's journey today, and then we'll lead into some conversation around whatever comes up. It's all welcome here on Kundalini After Dark. If you're listening to the recording in the archive, you can join us for the next Kundalini After Dark session. The link is in the description. As well as links to a few other events. We've got the Kundalini Q&A event. We've got some courses as well. You can check it all out. And as well, I've got the call to begin hosting some people here in my home. So if you're in the Toronto area and would like to connect in person for a Kundalini Awakening support group, discussion group, please send me a line by email and I can share with you some of the details. So that's something new and exciting, and we'll see what that evolves into. Maybe perhaps that'll turn into some Zoom calls as well alongside the in-person meetings. So that could be something to look forward to. Thank you all for your support, for being here with us today, for your engagement online, your donations that go such a long way. So thank you so much. As well, of course, you can find the link to Dimple's website in the description as well, where you can find out more about her work, her journey. You can listen to her podcast as well. She's got a really great podcast with some great guests, great conversation happening there. And you can also learn how you can work with her as well. So that'll be in the description also. Remembering here that tonight we're not here to discuss any medical advice. It's not a substitute for counseling or psychotherapy, just having a conversation on the internet about spirituality. So now that that's all out of the way, Dimple, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for
You're
having me, Brent. I really
oh,
appreciate it.
yeah, I appreciate it too. Your journey is really fascinating and very different from most of us here, which is your Kundalini awakening was something that you actively were seeking out, is something that you had been made aware of very early on in your life and your journey as you went through your spiritual process. So you knew on some level what this idea of Kundalini was. You knew that this was a potential for you. Whereas many of us, we're just exploring meditation or yoga or psychedelics or breath work, and suddenly this starts happening to us. And some of us didn't even have this word Kundalini. Whereas in your case, you were very aware. Not only that, you seem to have had a very obvious spiritual awakening process that began when you were just a toddler, which is very interesting as well. So what can you share with us a little bit about some of those themes? Let us know a little bit about your journey for those that didn't get a chance yet to hear our interview.
Thank you. It's an honor, first of all, to be here. And I would say thank you, everyone, for joining. Brent, this is probably my first space ever talking about Kundalini in a group setting. Okay. I never got a chance to do it because I always wanted to bring out this work in the world. And I think, thanks to you, the word Kundalini is now being spread all over. And I would say for me, my journey started very young. I would call it, now that I look back, it was more of a spiritual abuse. So I was under the guidance of a teacher since I was not even born. And this teacher was my mom's so-called brother, but he would always tell my mom, like, don't abort the child and keep this child. And when I would say I was very young when he started implanting the seed in me about Kundalini. So for me, it was all about achieving a title. It was not money or cars or fame. It was about Kundalini is something I have to achieve. That was the goal that he kept on planting in my mind. And he was a very famous astrologer. So he would look up my charts and he would say, if you don't practice yoga or meditation, or if you don't practice the Kundalini meditations or awaken your Kundalini, you're gonna go on a whole different route. You will be one of the bad women out there. And for me, I was like, oh, okay, I have to do this. I did not know what it meant. And because I trusted him, he was the person who would guide me through the process. So he would say, it's your time to do yoga. It's your time to do breath work. Okay. And I would do 7 to 14 hours of meditations literally on weekends. And I'm talking about when I became an adult. And I did not know what this was until it happened.
Yeah, so that's very interesting. I mean, even though you had the direction, the word, the idea, still not enough preparation to know really what this was all about. Yeah, and I'm really sorry to hear, that there was that spiritual abuse within your journey, within your life. Why don't we jump ahead a little bit? Because your work now is to work with other women that have experienced similar themes in their life. That's what you've recognized as part of your dharma, your mission, your purpose here. Your Kundalini awakening, your spiritual journey has brought you into your service role very clearly now. Can you tell us a little bit about the importance of that in your life, that type of work?
Absolutely. Thank you. So, because I went through the betrayal from a spiritual teacher, a leader, a guru, that pattern, that theme was going on in my life for so long until I realized, wait a second, this suffering, I had to deal with the suffering. And again, Kundalini awakening. The feminine energy helped me to come out of the betrayal. But this theme was ongoing until I understood what my power is, until I understood what the flaws were and how I was not able to see the power in myself, but I was seeing the power in other people. And that's why I gave my heart, my soul, my mind to others. But then again, Kundalini reminds us that. You have everything you have been looking for. You have everything within yourself. You don't need to seek anything outside of you. The love that you're looking for, the relationship that you're looking for, everything is within you. So, because I realized, okay, this betrayal theme is so ongoing, here I am today, I would say years later, that I realized this is all I need to do for the rest of my life, help other women who have been. Men, of course, but I really focus on women, but I have been teaching men too, of helping them heal their trauma and come out of the insecurities, the imposter syndrome, the depression, the sleepless nights that they all feel within their body because of betrayal, and awaken their kundalini through natural ways, which is, of course, breath work, yoga. So I became a yoga instructor thanks to my teacher, so there's some things that came out good from that man, but some things that were not so good. But if I look at it at the moment, I think the way this expression of Kundalini has come up on in my life, it all made sense. It all makes a lot of sense now that you're supposed to go through suffering to find who you truly are. And I'll call it she. She will do her best. To break you from relationships, she will do her best to get you betrayed. She will do her best to like get you the heartbreaks, maybe the addictions, so that you realize who you truly are. And then she awakens and accelerates the process.
Yeah, that's a really empowering way of looking at some of the challenges that we can go through. It sounds like you're framing them not as aimless suffering, but actually as initiations into our spiritual development, our growth. It's a really empowered perspective. And I know in our interview we discussed, you've had a very challenging life, very challenging themes, and you had this question. You had shared a little bit about a previous lifetime where you recognized that you were a yogi, that you were a healer, and you recognized why then have you come back into this life to suffer more, right? A lot of us are in that same boat, right? We come in with great gifts, great sensitivities, and yet still, as we get older, there's like immense, immense difficulty and suffering prior to remembering all of our spiritual development that we may have accumulated in previous lifetimes. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like being a young child and having such awareness of your connection with the divine feminine?
Sure. I absolutely love this story because so my mom, I was only 2 years old. I did not speak the language so I was born in a Sikh family. My mom practiced Hinduism, my dad practiced Sikhism. When I was two, I was in India, and obviously a two-year-old cannot speak the language. But here we are in, I don't know what city, I completely forgot, but my mom was sleeping, we all were sleeping, and on the bed, like I think it's like 2 a.m., I wake up and all of a sudden I ask my mom, I'm like, Mom, I call her by her name, I don't say mom. I call her by her name. She's amazed. How is this little two-year-old talking? And I say to her, get me some particular sweet that one of our neighbors went for some pilgrimage and he got it with him. So I am telling and directing my mom, go and get me that sweet. And she is surprised. How is she even talking? So she goes out there and she tells her mother-in-law, which is my grandmother, that she's asking for the sweet. Where do I go? And my grandmother's like, all right, let's go. They get that sweet from the neighbor. They bring it to me. And then as soon as they bring it to me, I tie this red cloth on my head. Because in Hinduism, I should say, in Hinduism, the feminine aspect is the color red is like the, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Brent, you know, the color red is something, it's so pure, it has passion, and all the feminine goddesses, they have the color red. So I wear this cloth on my head. I'm asking for a red cloth, and I simply chant in Hindi, Jai Mata Di, which means hail the goddess, hail the goddess. And I'm chanting and I'm doing this. You know, I'm only 2 years old, and I'm doing this act, which nobody understands in the family. And then my mom is like, oh my goodness, why is she doing this? I never taught her this. And then my whole family comes, my grandpa, my grandmother, and they're scolding my mom. They're like, you are teaching her this stuff. We are born from a Sikh family. Why did you teach her Hindu things? My mom is like, no, she does not even speak. How is she speaking? And then somebody in the group, because it's like the whole village gets together. Somebody in the group says, it's not your daughter. The goddess is inside her. You know, Mata, which means mother, is inside her. And till this day, whenever I speak, I get chills in my body. And the neighbor who bought the sweet was supposedly, he was handicapped. He comes, gives me the sweet, and I bless his head and his, what do you call it? His handicappedness, like his disability, goes away. And I don't believe the story because it's told to me by my mom. She's like, this is what exactly happened. The guy was walking. He was on crutches. He started walking. I'm like, interesting. So I feel like the mother or Kundalini energy was always with me. I don't have this memory of the story, but I feel like this was the part of her just showing me her connection with me throughout the time that I was born.
Wow. I love that story. I know you told it on our interview, but I just it's one of my favorite stories I think I ever heard. It's just incredible, incredible. Yeah, it's fascinating, fascinating. So many of us come into this life already with it almost you could say written in the stars that this is, something that is in the cards for us. This type of awakening, this type of relationship with the Divine Mother, healing gifts, healing abilities. Clearly, you're a gifted speaker as well. And I imagine a 2-year-old speaking like that was, hints that, a great speaker is in the works here, being developed here, growing. And so like it's just a really fascinating story. And then of course, from there, as you get older, like many of us, we begin to go through great difficult initiations, which further, of course, educate us and help us to understand the challenges of the people that we're meant to serve today, right? For you in this case, of course, generally speaking, mostly women, like you shared. Yeah, it's really interesting. You mentioned the red scarf. I don't know too much about the significance of red, like the meaning of it, but it's a feminine color, of course. I remember having many dreams, but one in particular where I was on a train, surrounded by women of all ages, all wearing all red. and I'm on this train, and I just knew this is, I'm in the presence of the divine feminine, the divine mother. For me, the train represented, that Shakti, the Kundalini, moving up the spinal column. For me, that's what it represented. And so, yeah, we have these encounters with the divine feminine in very interesting ways with that archetype of the divine feminine. Some of us, like yourself, begin to embody it directly in such an interesting way. Yeah,
Thank
very,
you.
very interesting. Go ahead.
And Tom says that the color red, symbolic of menstrual blood, white symbolic, symbolizing the masculine, is the color of semen. Thanks, Tom. That's, yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Yeah. So, moving forward on your journey, then of course you have this encounter with the spiritual teacher. They advise you to engage in some really intense practices. Like, that's really intense stuff. 7 to 14 hours a day of practicing, but clearly your devotion was there since the beginning, your devotion. Tell us a little bit about that moment where you describe a Kundalini awakening.
Sure. So the devotion was there, but it was also at that time, I think it was more of my ego mind wanting to achieve something. And I feel all my life while I was under this teacher, even though I was practicing meditation and I was practicing yoga and I was teaching yoga, I was a yoga instructor teaching at all these tech companies, my weekends were only staying home and meditating 7 to 14 hours. Why? Because he would isolate me. He would say, no boyfriends, no partying, no alcohol. That's not good for you. Okay, fine. I get it. But I would wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning because he would call me from India and he would wake up. And I can probably say this in this group for the first time ever. This teacher would astral travel to me. If somebody does not know what that means, I'll be happy to share. He would astral travel to me in my room, wake me up, and my bed would start moving. And I'm like, oh, teacher is here again. I gotta wake up, I gotta sit cross-legged, and I gotta meditate. And if I don't wake up because I'm tired, my body's exhausted of doing 2,000 downward dogs a week because I'm teaching 80 classes a week. He would say, nope, you have to wake up because if you're not ready, then how will we do the work? How will you achieve Kundalini? So, all right. So it's like I'm doing a marathon through meditation. It never happened when I was meditating 7 to 14 hours. It actually happened completely after I disconnected from this teacher, when I found out that this person was just teaching me some things, but not everything, to keep me hooked. And eventually, his idea was to bring me to India so he can get me trafficked or married to somebody for money. But I would say 2 years after I found out that in this instance where I was just betrayed from this person, I disconnected from him completely, and then I was on my own. When I was on my own, guess what I did? Everything I already knew what to do, which is only meditate. That's all I knew what to do. I was like, mother, father, whomever you are, wherever you are, the universe, you need to help me. I have no teacher. Because this person literally would tell me, there's no relationships out there. You're supposed to be by yourself. You should not get married. You don't need children. You don't need father. You don't need mother. So I didn't have no relationships. I was a loner. So I would sit, meditate, and I would say to myself, to my soul, to my spirit, you need to be my teacher. You need to teach me what I need to learn because I really wanted this Kundalini awakening. It's like the shiny object syndrome. I think I had that. For me, it was wearing a Kundalini crown. And then I would sit and sit and sit. And then one day, 2016, I was on my mattress on the floor, didn't teach that day. 9 a.m. between 9 and 10 a.m. I was just tired. I don't want to wake up, so I was just laying on bed, and thank God I was alone in the house. And I just felt this rush of energy from my spine, and it's spinning in circles. And I knew it's her because I had learned about her. And I was a fanatic. And I was like, okay, I know it's you. I'm not gonna fear. I'm just gonna allow you to move through me. Do whatever you want. And obviously, it was scary as hell. I was scared, but I was like, do whatever you need to do. So this energy is moving, it's going into all my chakras, the energy centers of my body, going towards the head. And then all of a sudden, I see a snake. And it's like every time I say this story, it feels new to me. It's like as if it's happening right now too. So I see the snake. The color is either, I don't know, red or yellow. But then, and then the my ears, I'm hearing a sound of a train. I hear the sound, and then I'm hearing like train, how the train honks, like that sound, and it's so loud in my ears. And all of a sudden, this my body heats up, and it's inside my body, something is heating up right in my lower back, my lower abdominal, and I can literally feel something as if there's another creature inside of me moving in me, and I have no control. But I'm just surrendering because I was taught to surrender. I'm surrendering. I'm like, do whatever you want to do. And during that time, I am moving my body in all weird yogic positions. I always taught yoga, but I did not teach what happened to me. I didn't teach that stuff. This is like brand new poses happening. And I'm like, whoa, you know, it was so crazy. It was so intense. That was my first experience that I felt as an adult.
Wow. Yeah, it's
And I
really.
want to add to that. I want to add to that. After this experience, this feeling of love, I think I mentioned this on the podcast. I never felt love before. I think that was my only time that I felt love in my life.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. That's really incredible, really incredible. Yeah. And I know many of us here have a similar story relating to our awakening experiences. And some of us may not as well. And I just feel like highlighting that not everybody gets to have these really marked, clear experiences where the Kundalini rises. Some of us is very gentle, can't really pinpoint a moment. But for some, of course, like Dimple here, yeah, we have these experiences that change our lives forever, right? Change our lives forever. Yeah. And so, of course, I guess you had the awareness, ah, this is Kundalini awake. This is what I guess, you know, that teacher was pushing you towards rather aggressively. But nonetheless, here you are. That was 2016, so it's been almost a decade now of integration and further embodiment. Amazing. So, Dimple, there are many here who have had similar awakening experiences to you, similar timelines as well, who may be inclined towards service in some way. And I imagine that you may be very inspiring for them. For those who may be a little unsure of how to proceed in giving their gifts, do you have any insight, any advice, any encouragement? You've put yourself out there in a really big way, to give your gifts, to share your message, to inspire and empower one another, other people. And there are some who would like to do something very similar to what you're doing. And I just was wondering if you had any encouragement for them to work through any resistance, blocks, insecurities, doubts, right?
Yeah, I can definitely say one thing that I had. So even though thanks for saying that I'm a good speaker, but I was not a good speaker. From the age 2 when I spoke, and that was not me, it was a goddess speaking through me. Later in my teenage years, my relatives from India would never call our home phone if I answered the phone because I used to stutter. I would stutter, I would say ha, 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 and then I would say hello. So I was very bad speaker. And even until I kept on practicing, but even until like I would say age 20, 30, I still stutter. If I'm nervous, you will hear me stuttering. But one thing for me was if I want to put myself out there, I have to speak. because, or I gotta write, but I rather speak, it's easier. I was stuttering while I was speaking, and there was no way for me to change that. And the only way is Dimple, go speak. That's the only way. Even if you're stuttering, and by the way, English is my second language, guys. I learned English, okay, because I did not go to college. I don't have an academic degree. I learned English because I wanted to speak. From stuttering to learning English to speaking. So all of your resistance is just an obstacle for you to find what your real power is within you.
Love that.
That power you already have within you.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And so you and I were speaking a little bit prior to beginning our call today about how, we're not here to play guru or as if we have all the answers or if we are perfected beings. We're here to have conversations and just see where it goes and to share and create a space where we can all support one another. And there are some who feel I can't begin my work until I'm perfect.
Oh.
But you're so inspiring. Like you're saying, no, like if I wanted to overcome the stuttering, I've got to go and begin the work as a speaker and then naturally now look at you now, right? Just so clear. It was the same for me actually around speaking. I had this insecurity or this block because I looked at some really incredible speakers, spiritual teachers giving their messages. And I remember noting that, they would just sit and just flow. No ums, no ahs, no hesitation, no preparation, no notes, nothing. And I said, I can't start until I'm speaking like them. And then I would start listening very closely. And I noted that even some of those really great speakers, teachers, now and then they would maybe use the wrong word or they would use the wrong conjugation or there was an or an ah. And I said, ah, there's a human there. And then I said, shit. If there's a human there, that means I have no excuse for myself as well. And so I said, okay, I guess I have to just, put myself out there and start sharing. And so, yeah, I can relate on that point as well. We can't be perfect. We have to start in some way. Of course, don't have to rush that. But if we're feeling the call, clearly, we've got to do something with it, right? So very inspiring. Thank you so much, Dimple. Thank you.
You're welcome. I just want to add, if you take just one step towards whatever it is that you really want to do, just one step, and then you offer a prayer to her, she's gonna come and walk with you the next 100 steps.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much. So, Dimple, tell us a little bit about your work today after having taken those steps and then after having had the Divine Mother walk many more steps with you. What do you now offer to others? How can people connect with you and learn more?
Sure. So at the moment, I help women heal from trauma and toxic cycles of abuse. And if you are a guy, that's okay. You can still reach out. But typically, my work is again to help them find their power within them so that they don't give their power away. Because most of these women who have been betrayed or oppressed, silenced, what they don't realize is they are giving away their power to other people. It could be a boss, it could be a friend, it could be your husband, wife. And that power is within you that you need to find for within yourself, but you will not find it if you are hidden, like if the trauma is on top that's running your life. So you're running in cycles and running in patterns of abuse. So that's what I teach, just to end and break the cycle of abuse.
Brilliant. And I think it's important that we highlight here that you are one of the rare coaches that are able to bring a Kundalini awakening informed perspective, right? So many people are going through these themes as they purge, as they clear, as they address their traumas as a result of the awakening taking place within them. And while there are incredible therapists out there that can help, there's this piece where it's like, does the person I'm working with understand that I've had a very profound energetic spiritual awakening called Kundalini? And having somebody there that gets that piece can make a big, big difference. So I just want to highlight that for our audience here who sometimes finds, I know that that we find it difficult to find people to work with that understand that piece. And here you are. So thank you so much for your work. So dimplebindra.com, if you'd like to learn more about Dimple, connect with her, send her a line to find out about how you can work with her more closely. Also got your podcast on dimplebinder.com as well. Check it all out. Thank you so much for sharing with us here, Dimple. For everyone else here as well in the chat, relating and commenting, thank you so much. We're going to open the floor up now to hear from others on the call. Maybe you've got something to share, some reflections. Maybe you have some insights of your own. Maybe you can relate. Maybe you've got a story like Dimple of when you were a young baby and had some profound spiritual phenomena or experience. Maybe you got a question for Dimple. All is welcome here tonight. The links to Dimple's work are in the description. You can check out some of the other links as well to some of the things that I've got going on as well. We've also got, like I mentioned, the Kundalini Q&A meetings. Like I said, if you're in the Toronto area and would like to meet in person, you're welcome to send me a line and I can share some details with you about that as well. Thank you all so much for being here, for all of your support. Let's open the floor up and see where our conversation goes tonight. All right, let's hear from Tom.
Story. It's totally fascinating. My question, I've already typed it into the, but I thought I'd get you this way instead. I received Shakti Bhat in 2003, and since then I've had many extraordinary experiences with the goddess and with my guru and others. My question though is, my heart still feels shut down, still closed. And that's maybe, I don't know why it's taking so long, but that's just my karma, perhaps. But it still feels really shut. And what technique or method or what would you suggest to help open it in a healthy way? I'll recall a story of someone who kept begging, have his heart opened, and ended up having open heart surgery briefly afterwards. So that's not what I want. But you know what I mean. How does one accomplish that? Or how does one get the goddess's help to accomplish that besides just, you know, begging, speaking to her?
So Tom, I also want to answer that you're on your chat. You asked how old was I during my time with the guru? From the time I was born, because he was with my mom, you know, throughout. So he helped her not to abort me. And he said, if she's born, it will be better for the family and for the world. So I would say from the time I was born, but consciously that I can remember is age 9 or so, all the way until age 30-ish. Yeah. Okay. So open your heart. One exercise that I practice a lot, because my heart has also been broken numerous times with multiple people, is it's a very powerful practice. It comes from the tradition of Tantra. But all you do is you envision the goddess, whichever goddess you like, if you have her face, you know, or you can envision just light in the center of your chest. You visualize it. You visualize her face, the way she wears her clothing, or just light, just golden light in the center part of your chest. And then you envision the light like a little ball, and then you envision the light expanding and expanding and opening up your heart. And as it's opening up your heart, you are also releasing fears, past old memories, old wounds, old trauma, betrayals, heartbreaks, someone has done anything wrong to you. Okay, you're basically expanding the light within your heart center. It's going from your heart center. When you expand the light, you're just imagining that light to take its own form and let it expand to all the parts of your body. So you're basically expanding the golden light from your heart to the head, from your heart down towards your feet in all directions, and now you're forming a big circle. So it's like a small ball of golden light now expands into a big circle around you, and you're creating an auric space, which is your energy field. And let the light expand about 5 to 10 feet away from you in a big circle. And this is going to help you. If you do it over time, you will see a difference.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Remember, just one more, if you don't mind. The feeling of bliss of not of handling everything without any kind of interference by the ego, like when things for a day, for instance, no matter what happened, it was just okay. I'll handle everything, but never got angry, never got irritated by anything or annoyed. Just went through that day. Apparently, I've induced that in someone else once. At least she said so. I'm wondering that would become that that would that be a part of the being living as the witness in witness consciousness, or is that because that was Shakti jumping into someone else from me, and having I experienced that myself too after Shakti, but I just want to get back to that state of bliss or of being unaffected by the vicissitudes of life and just going through it smoothly, beautifully, gracefully.
Brent, do you want to answer that?
It's simply what comes to me is ongoing practice, right? Ongoing practice. Sometimes we get these great, we call it a glimpse. Sometimes those glimpses are a brief moment. Sometimes they're ongoing for some time. That seem to validate this path, what's possible. And it's a really memorable experience that encourages us to keep practicing. Many people practice on faith that it's going to have some positive benefits in some way or another. But some of us practice not on faith, but because we've had an experience that may have been fleeting. Of course, there may be also some attachment there. I got to get back there. I got to get back there. This moment is not good enough, or there's something wrong with this moment because it's not like that moment where I was in the flow, where I was feeling everything just going so well. So that also teaches us to practice equanimity. But it's simply practice, ongoing practice. Really. And spiritual practice is something many of us may have had, powerful awakening experiences as a result of maybe, I'll use myself as an example. Maybe you could say kind of dabbling at times in this and that. But when you see that it's like real, something valid and powerful is happening here, that's when we kind of get to go all in on the practice, dedicate our life to sadhana, dedicate our life to practice. And then we see ongoing stability of in some of these more fluid states of consciousness. For lack of a better term at the moment.
It was a, sorry, go ahead. I was going to say just an anecdote about Joseph Campbell, the great American mythologist, who was challenged on about faith, and his response to the person was, "I no longer need faith, I have experience." So that was I think it's a cute little anecdote. Anyway, thank you very much for your responses. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Great
You.
questions, Tom. And I just want to quickly put a little plus one on Dimple's practice of that radiating that love from the heart. This is the practice that opened my heart as well. Perhaps not exactly the same. You can at least in my experience, I kind of made it my own, but yeah, very powerful practice, Dimple. Changed my whole life.
Dimple, does one maintain the feeling of love as that golden light expands, or is that the feeling one cultivates during that?
You basically visualize the love feeling as that color, golden light, or you can visualize the love feeling as an image of the goddess.
Okay.
Either will work. And you're expanding it from your heart center, and then you're expanding it to all the parts of your body and your auric field. And then eventually, what will happen is over time, that is going to be who you are.
Okay, thank you.
You are going to be in a sense of love because, in reality, we all are interconnected with each other through love and nothing else.
Thanks very much for your time as well. Thanks, guys, for allowing me this time. Thank you.
Of course, you're most
Beautiful.
welcome, sir.
Beautiful. Okay, let's hear from Joe. Joe DiRiso and I had a great conversation about his journey on the podcast. You can check it out if you like. Hey Joe, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I think it's great synchronicity that Brett and Dimple there got together. I'm just amazed. The energy from both of you together is phenomenal, and I appreciate that you're having this opportunity for us to hear you two speak on the topic of Kundalini and share both of your experiences. So, anyways, I wanted to ask Dimple about her. You mentioned, Dimple, that you teach yoga. Do you teach Kundalini yoga specifically, or a mix of styles?
So I teach yoga based on what the problem the person is suffering from. So
Okay.
if you're suffering
My
from, yeah, so it
okay.
depends on your struggle. So based on your struggle, I will customize the whole program for you. But yes, there will be a mix of Kundalini yoga, there will be a mix of other yogic asanas. And sometimes if the person does not need physical asana, then we actually go into the 97% of what yoga is, which is all about awakening the Kundalini.
Because my Kundalini was awakened, was triggered by a Kundalini yoga posture that I learned from Yogi Bhajan many years ago. And, have you actually had any clients whose Kundalini was activated through practice of yoga? Do you know of any?
Only my own clients. So my own clients, because I would practice yoga and practice meditate, practice yoga and so not practice, teach yoga, teach meditation. And in those practices, I would say in my 20-year career, I probably have 5 to 7 people only that have awakened their Kundalini.
That's still a large number.
That's it. I know. To me, it's like, oh, that's it. But you know what?
That's great. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Of course, you're most welcome, Joe.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, that's a big number. And I bet there are some who haven't yet figured out that that's what they're going through or something like that. In a 20-year career, you must have taught a lot of people. Yeah. Joe, your awakening, I remember, if I recall correctly, your awakening took place as after a Kundalini yoga practice, but then it was a Sufi path that helped you with integration, right?
Right. Yeah, that was well, I described my spiritual journey as having followed a yogic path to awaken beyond life and a Sufi path to awaken within life. So
That is
beautiful.
amazing.
Beautiful. Yeah. Joe, I would love to have you on Coles for an event like this one time. If you're
Oh, well,
interested, that would be
I
great.
would sure.
Yeah,
Thank you.
great. Okay, yeah, we'll talk. Thank you. And yeah, really, the way you speak about Sufism is just really beautiful, really beautiful. Yeah, so I'd love to hear more. Okay,
Sure.
thank you. Yeah, let's hear from Deborah.
Hello.
Oh.
Such a wonderful story, Dimple. Your life story that you sh well, I'm sure there's much more than what you've shared, but it was quite magnificent. My question and comment and query, like you just mentioned, we're all connected by love. However, there's so much suffering in the world, and the consequences of humanity's effect on the planet and with each other continues to become, in my observation, more dire. And the need, need is not really the word I'm looking for, but for compassion and for really something must change. I'm only speaking for myself, but my own spiritual awareness is not limited to my own growth. I cannot just simply witness what I see happening around me and feel isolated from it. And I'm just wondering what kind of reflections you've had on that topic in your life, and maybe some advice or just anything that you care to share.
Sure, Deborah. Thank you. That's like a good reflection and a question in one. I would say yes, this world is not a, it's not where we want it to be. Yes, we, some of us are suffering in our own way, but whatever we focus on is going to expand. So if we see the world as this negative, dark place, that's all we're gonna see. That's all we are gonna be. But we cannot change the world until we change ourselves, you know? And I feel that each one of us has a duty, like we have our moral duty to really work on our birthright, which is happiness, which is to cultivate love within ourselves, and which is to awaken our kundalini. Why? Maybe because I have these strong visions from my past life, or I personally feel that every person in this lifetime has a purpose. They have to reach their purpose through suffering. When you suffer, and then you are going to hopefully understand who you truly are. So my, what I would say is, we cannot change the world until we change ourselves. Once we change ourselves, we cultivate the love and the compassion, and whatever we want to see in the world, it's going to transmute from us to other people. And there has been so many studies also done on this, that for example, groups of people meditating together can literally reduce the crime in the city. You know, so if anyone wants that research, I'll be happy to share. So if we meditate in our room, single individual, we are actually changing the vibrations of the room and the place where we stay. And imagine if we want our world to be more compassion, more loving world, all of us have to get together and meditate, and Brent can lead us on it, where we can actually send good loving vibrations over to the world, and eventually it is gonna get there. So my recommendation, it is whatever is happening outside, I'm not saying disconnect from it, but if you take the responsibility of changing who you are on the inside, things outside will change.
I understand what you're saying. When I was a very young child, I grew up in a Catholic family, and that has its own sets of boundaries, I guess. But one of the things I remember so clearly, and I must have been very young, but I remember hearing specifically about not monasteries, but I don't think they're called nunneries, but monasteries with just women, nuns, and they would pray. Just it was a ritual. This is before I knew anything about Taoism and Buddhism and other world religions and other world cultures, and I found that to be there was something there was such devotion to service. And it helped me to feel like I need to find my community. Plus, it also helped me to feel empowered. But that was a long time ago, and it just so I hear what you're saying. I've heard and have walked that path most of my life, but
Amazing.
I am distressed, and it's. I don't want to say, that what I'm focusing on is creating more suffering by just by being aware of it. But I don't see any real solutions to the problems we are facing without an expansive consciousness, awareness amongst all humanity, and perhaps beyond what we understand to be our fellow sentient beings. So anyways, thank you for your response. I really appreciate your time.
You're most welcome, Deborah. Brent, did you want to answer to Deborah?
I'll say that on the topic of meditation, like you had shared, Dimple, the effects and the power of meditating together with a shared intention, it's very palpable for those that are sensitive. It seems to definitely have an impact, and like you shared, there's some studies showing that it's measurable as well. On that point, kundaliniawareness.org/global, we are hosting a Kundalini meditation March 28th, 2026. 2 p.m. Eastern. The idea is to get as many people like us together meditating with a shared intention to bring about peace, love, awakening on this planet together. So you can spread the word, you can mark your calendar, you can save the date. I know it's a ways out. The idea is to let this movement kind of build momentum. So the more people that join live on the call to meditate together would be very powerful. We also have most Tuesdays and Fridays, 8 a.m. Eastern, I host what's called Shakti Hour, where we join together to engage in spiritual practice in a group. You can do your thing, you can meditate, you can chant, you can dance, you can do yoga, stretching, whatever comes up spontaneously. You can even leave the call in the background as you work with the intention of joining and contributing to the shared energy field and enjoying the benefits of that. So we've got some things going on to this end here that Dimple and Deborah are sharing about. Yes, there's lots of pain, lots of suffering in the world. It can be very overwhelming for those with an open heart, like we were talking about earlier. Having an open heart doesn't just mean you feel lots of love. You feel everything, right? You feel everything. You feel it all. It's not not easy, not easy. So, Dimple, I know you haven't got much more time with us left.
I'm okay,
We've got
Brent. I would like to stay.
okay, great, great. You'll postpone dinner and
Yes,
be with
dinner
us in a
can
little bit.
wait.
Okay, great. That's good to hear. We'll go over to Sarah and then we'll hear from Catherine and Angelina, but let's see what Sarah's got for us.
Hello. My original question, Dimple, you already kind of answered via Tom's question about, I think the question was like how to kind of find that love, maybe like security, free, flowy feeling long term or more permanently. And your answer kind of answered what I was going to ask, which is, so I have this interesting sensory experience that I've shared with Brent, where I get like a lot of energy in my heart chakra, and it gets really electric and really buzzy. And I've just been trying to work on like just balancing where that energy goes in my body, so it's not so built up in my heart. It's a really delightful feeling, and I've been harnessing it for energy work. But it gets so overwhelming sometimes. It makes me tremble. It makes me It's just a lot of energy in my body. So your answer to kind of like visualize expanding my energy field was really, really helpful, and I'm going to try that. On that note, I mean, do you have any adjustments to your answer based on my interesting energy problem?
Yes. So for Tom, it was expansion because he felt blocked, right? For you, we need to go deeper. So I would use the visualization of actually grounding our human body with Mother Earth. And there are two ways to do that. One is actually physically grounding. So put your feet barefoot, on beach or a park. Second way is hugging a tree for 7 minutes. Again, a lot of research on it. 7 minutes can actually help you literally release your negativity, or extra energy that's stored in different spaces in your body. It can help to neutralize it. And the third technique is actually visualizing. You can visualize a green light from the crown of your head going all the way down into your feet, and then open up your feet chakras, which is very simple to do. The visualization is imagine under your feet, there are two little flowers just in like this shape. And now you're opening up your feet chakras like you're opening them up to full bloom. When you open up your feet chakras, you can actually absorb more earth energy. So for
That
your
is,
yes,
yeah.
Sarah. So for
Well,
you,
okay, so I've been getting attuned lately for energy healing, and part of that is like getting the energy work done in myself. And the healer who was working on me said that I had so much, it was like water coming out of my feet. my energy. Like I just had so much pouring out of my feet. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. So for you, because when I'm talking to people, I talk intuitively because I can sense and feel your energy. So for you, it would be go more wider, and the visualization can simply be use a green light from the crown of your head going all the way down into your feet. Now you want to go 500 feet deeper into Earth's core. So visualize as if your feet are on sand or dirt. And now the green light is going further down, further down, further down, as deep as you can go in your visualization, where you put a stop to it whenever it stops. So then you're connected to the earth core. So that would
Yeah.
be my recommendation for you.
Thank you. That's so helpful. I also just wanted to point out, as you were telling us about your red scarf and all of the symbology of the color red, I'm sitting at my jewelry station and I just happened to be making a red necklace while
Wow.
we were talking about that. So I thought that was kind of a fun little synchronicity. Okay, thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thanks for sharing, Sarah. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks for your time. Yeah. Of
Brilliant.
course.
Thank you so much, Sarah Dimple, for your recommendations and insight. I'll remind our listeners that if they would like to get some more personalized recommendations from Dimple, dimplebinder.com is where you can connect with her. Brilliant, brilliant wisdom.
Thanks,
Thank you
Brent.
so much. Yeah, let's hear from Catherine and then Angelina.
Thank you. Nice to be here. I got here a little late, so I apologize. I didn't hear all of your share, Dimple, but it's always nice to be in this community. Deborah, I've been doing, I'm like 3 weeks away from finishing my final work, final master's degree on systems change and healing this world. And so I'm very deeply into this topic, and I think there's actually a lot of hope. And I just wanted to share what I've been seeing. I always remind myself that chaos is part of an alchemical process. Like chaos leads to higher states of order. Like there are natural processes at work. But my experience with a Kundalini awakening, I'm in a co-awakening with somebody. Where I had a merge of energy bodies, but non-locally, so from a distance. So it was astral, but physically, I just started picking up on all these sensations and clairaudience and all this stuff. But so what I've been looking at is systems change within a quantum social theory framework, which so is very different than kind of what we've been taught about how change happens, that it's linear, that it's one person to the next. That it's very deterministic, but quantum actually says we're inherently it proves that the oneness that so this entanglement concept is not that we're twisted together, but it means that two correlated particles, even if they can be separated by light years, multiple light years, if you make a measurement on one, it'll instantaneously register on the other. So Einstein called that spooky action at a distance. So that's my awakening with another human being is an entangled awakening. And these are processes that are happening all the time that we're not even aware of. Like that I feel like there's so much going on under the radar, and there's tipping points for collective agency, consciousness, and awakening. And what I've heard that resonates with me is that we're going through waves of awakening, that we're going like there's a wave happening now, there will be, and like the more people that awaken, because consciousness is collective, like not even by like speaking out loud, but just literally like the new sphere, they can measure it, the Global Consciousness Project. Like when my consciousness shifts, it affects the collective consciousness, and as does everybody's. But seen from a different lens, I just think there's a ton of hope. There's a really great book. It's called You Matter More Than You Think, and that's by Quantum Thriving or Quantum Social Change for a Thriving World. But Yeah, I think we need to address trauma, which is in the nervous system. And once there's more education around trauma and an expanded framework for social change and consciousness, I think that we're well on our way. But I see a lot of people working in the space, and I hear you, and I have hope. So thanks.
Thanks. Thank you, Catherine. That was amazing.
Brilliant.
I love listening to everything about the collective. So I feel like on an individual level, we need to do the work and then it's going to go on to the collective.
And the quantum physics seems to back that, which is good. We've got science on our side too. Amazing. Yeah, thank you so much, Catherine. Brilliant. Okay, let's hear from Angelina. Angelina, like Dimple, also big emphasis on working with the feminine.
Have to find the unmute. Apologies that I was late.
No problem.
One of the thoughts that comes to mind is I think as a culture, we've become obsessed with happiness. And for me, the Kundalini awakening experience has been about joy. So there are days that I'm not happy, but there isn't a day that I'm not joyful. And so the joyfulness is something that comes from a very much deeper place. And so I think part of the issue for us as a community is in looking what's going on in the world, we are looking for a level of happiness and we are not looking at ourselves and the power of joy. Aeneas Nin has a great quote, which is, "We do not see things the way they are. We see things the way we are." And so, if you look at that, the more joyful and the more tapped into our own joy we can become, the more that's reflected, as you just said, it's reflected into the world, but not have the confusion about happiness. I mean, Buddha says what is the expression? Pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. I mean, so there's going to be pain. The question is, what is your reaction to it? We're not going to have a happy world. The world is going to have happiness and sadness. The question is whether, as Brent, as you said, we have the equanimity to go through it with a joyful experience. And so I think that's important. In thinking about when we can get so discouraged about what the world is up to, it's a reflection of what we're up to, and we're in pursuit of happiness rather than in acknowledgement of joy. Thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you, Angelina. So well articulated. Appreciate that a lot. Yeah. Any reflections come to you, Dimple?
I would say I definitely echo whatever you're saying, Angelina, because all of us are, doing our own thing on daily basis to be happy in our way. Some people call it happiness, and for me, I call it peace. I just say, am I peaceful today or not? And the truth is, our soul, our spirit is actually at peace. We just get so conflicted in the mind that we forget to come back to ourselves. So I think it's like on the outside, everything looks chaotic, but on the inside, everything is peaceful. And if we can just stay on the inside and connect on the inside and disconnect from the outer reality, then I personally believe in my case or my life that there is peace 24/7. I don't have to go chase it. It's always there, but I'm just focusing on the wrong things if I'm not feeling good in the moment. So thank you, Angelina.
No, thank you.
Yeah, that was a
And
big thing.
Brent's comment, I have always been in touch with the divine feminine, but I've had a series of Kundalini awakenings over the years, and one of them was a direct experience of the divine feminine in the temple of Mother Earth in Peru. And I was totally unprepared for it. And unlike many people who I think have the Kundalini awakening as a result of the yoga, for me, it kind of came in a very roundabout way through a witness practice that I've been doing for 30 years. And so, but that awakening was one in the Inca tradition. And so part of what I've learned recently is what is the similarity between the Western Christian variation of Kundalini, and there's no exact variation. What's the Hindu tradition of Kundalini, and what are the descendants of the Inca tradition of Kundalini, because all three have this similar witnessing process that I experience. So I think all too often we're not aware that there are multiple cultures that have a different name, but it is the same process. It's the awakening of the divine feminine.
Beautiful. Angelina, thank you. I'm fascinated by this idea of the Incan tradition. If you have any resources, books, any even names of people that have some information about this, I would love to dive
If
into it.
I send them to you, you can post them. I don't have them readily available. I
Right.
can, so if I send them to you, you can post them. It came by way of the fact that I attribute the majority of my process of Kundalini to a tool that I teach called the Enneagram. And the Enneagram is all about witnessing. You develop the witness mentality. Which is what, as the more I read about Hindu and the more I read about the Western Christianity and Christian mystics, again, it's about witnessing. And that's what the Inca tradition is about. It's about becoming the witness to move into a unit of consciousness. They have different names for it, but it is the same philosophy, which is interesting to me because I think we wind up thinking it's just this one thing and it doesn't exist anywhere else. And the more I look, the more I'm finding it in all the other places. I will send you references.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
Thank
very
you.
much.
Witnessing has been a major catalyst to my energetic process. Witnessing was some of the first stuff that I began engaging in. Dimple, has witnessing and observing practice been part of your journey?
Oh yeah, big time. I think I'm still doing it even now. I'm witnessing what's going on in my body, so I think absolutely witnessing is something that in yoga, that's what they teach. You have to be a witness to your sensations, to your emotions, not don't react to anything that's coming up for you, stay calm, stay present, stay focused, concentrate. So big theme. Thank you.
Fascinating. Thank
Welcome.
you, Angelina. I'm really curious about the Incan tradition. I have a bit of a passion about exploring the idea of Kundalini awakening outside of the terminology that we use from Hinduism and yoga, and seeing that there's actually a universal human experience around which these great traditions have been formed. And so, very interesting.
And I wound up going to Peru to do the work with the Incas. Because my guru at the time was a devotee of Kuan Yin, which again is just a different tradition. And so just finding all of it in so many different places is fascinating to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Looking forward to those
Thank
links.
you.
Whenever you get a chance to share, and I'll pass it along in our Facebook
Thank you.
group.
And Sarah, I just want to say, I don't see that you get shy speaking. I'm reading the chat right now.
Oh, I get so shy. Well, and particularly when it comes to talking about my Kundalini awakening, I it's such a vulnerable story because it was involved what would be perceived as mental illness. It was like quite shamanic, and I ended up hospitalized. So that's like the and that's like the thing that I feel compelled to share. Like I think that's what's valuable. And Brent has kind of helped me understand that being relatable in that way, while being a female and being of the age I am, and you know, with the appearance that I embody, and being able to be vulnerable and share my experience, how valuable that is for people. So yeah, that's the big one. That's where I get most. Just like it's a trauma response. It's a trauma response, you know, from being mishandled by the medical system, and then being, you know, misunderstood by my family and friends for a really, really long time as a result. So I'm getting more confident in speaking about it and what I know to be true. So.
Well, thanks for being you, and it does not show on the outside. I just want you to know. So no one knows your secret.
Amazing. Yeah. Thank you, Sarah. And every now and then I'll remind people that one thing that I would like this community to be is a bit of like a practice environment where if you feel like coming out and speaking and expressing, you want to know what that's like. Well, here's a group of people who get you, who understand, who are not going to say that's nonsense, you're crazy. So that's something to keep in mind if you just want to try and, take your expression out for a test ride and see what that feels like. And maybe perhaps surprise yourself that it feels really good. And the feedback that you get might be, really positive, and that could encourage you to keep going. So this is a space to do that. That's one of the purposes behind what this is. I didn't intend for that to happen. I didn't intend for any of this to happen. It just happened. So here we are. Yeah. Dimple, there's a question here from Aiden in the chat. Aiden says, I would love to hear some wisdom from your perspective on how the masculine could hold space slash witness the feminine, especially with loved ones. Perhaps what you have learned, if you would like to share.
Ooh, that's a very good question. I wish I could just read it also, but I'm like trying to get to the question. Oh yeah, okay. So, Aiden, I think Brent will be the perfect person to answer this, but my perspective is this. I always thought if a masculine energy, masculine, like a person, like a man, is unhealed, he obviously gives up his or gives his unhealed trauma to others, right? So from my perspective, the best way a masculine could actually hold space and witness the feminine is just allow the feminine to just speak and share and express her feelings, sister, mother, wife, girlfriend. And you're just there looking at her eyes and just listening and holding space for her. Don't fix her. She does not need your solutions at that moment when she's trying to express. She's just sharing. Because we females, we have, if we don't talk, we build up illnesses in our bodies. So we have to talk. We have to communicate. We have to be around our masculine to hold space for us, to make us feel comfortable. So that's the best way. Look at them in the eye. That's what they want. They want you to, you know, don't be on your phone when your feminine person is trying to communicate with you. And most feminine, and I'm sure a lot of females here will say yes to this. We ask a lot of questions. We are curious. We want to have conversations. Answer that. Don't use one words. Don't use one word to answer. Say stories as if you're talking in emails. You know, that's what I would say. Your the best gift that you can give of like a feminine figure in your life is just your presence. Look at them in the eye. Don't be distracted. stay present. And obviously, if you want to learn how to stay present, Brent will teach you. But that will be my answer. Brent, if you want to answer to that too.
Thank you so much, Temple. Great wisdom. Yeah. Of course, I'm not the perfect one to answer, but I can share what I can from experience here. I will say that we have the both the masculine and the feminine within us. Your relationship with those expressions of divine energy as they play out within your own system will play out in your relationships. So if you're not able to hold space for your own emotions, your own thoughts, your own experiences, you won't be able to do that for another. So that's why sitting in meditation or journaling or being with your emotions, witnessing your own phenomena as it comes and goes, your own feminine expression as it comes and goes, that is the practice, the playground for you to learn. And then, of course, that translates over into relationships with other people, right? So not fearing the feminine expression. I think what happens with many men is we feel, I'm anxious, I'm sad, I'm depressed, I'm angry. How do I make this go away? What is the solution? And either that's to problem solve, great, sure, but in many cases, it can also be to cope, which is to escape, to avoid, to dismiss, to suppress. And so naturally, if that's your relationship with what's going on inside your own body, then when somebody stands in front of you with sadness, anger, anxiety, whatever it may be, we say, how can I make this go away? How can I change this? What can I do to make this stop? Right? And if it's direct towards you and you're in the hot seat, then it's, maybe you want to defend. Let me explain myself. Maybe if I explain why I did or didn't do what happened, that'll make you feel better. And then that's not really resting in the divine masculine, resting in that witnessing presence that can just hold a space for that dance to take place before you. And of course, once you hold that space, naturally it seems that then it opens up the dynamic for repair, for soothing, for healing, for deep love to take place there. It takes practice. It takes practice. And that practice begins with the relationship within ourselves. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Let's hear from Noemi.
Hello. I just wanted to share an experience I had last night, about like the masculine holding space for the feminine. And I guess this is more of like a, 'cause I do know that we do have both of those expressions within us and all that stuff, but in a like relational kind of way. I experienced some people at a rave, and they were just transitioning between like dancing together, but like the male counterpart, I guess, was kind of like around her, like almost like stroking her like energy field, it looked like. Like it felt like he was holding her femininity in a way, like he was holding her creativity, like allowing her to step forward into that role and offering a safe space, like to remind her like that she is okay and she's safe to do that. I don't think everybody needs, I think everybody needs support, obviously, when it comes to that. But it's really special to see that happening right in front of you. And like for me, it hit close to home because I feel like I'm supposed to be a bright presence, and my whole life, I wasn't. Like, I was just very afraid of being in front of people and putting myself out there. And I still do have those fears sometimes. But it was just really special to see that that exists. Like, a man stepping forward or a person stepping forward to their counterpart and allowing them to express their full nature. And it's even more beautiful when it's in public and it's like a public expression. And like I said, it does hit close to home because I feel like I haven't really experienced that. Somebody kind of like holding my energy field in that way, in like a creative way, like where movement is involved. Because movement in public, especially in a rave or in a some type of public kind of space, it can be scary to move your body in ways that your body wants to. At least for me, sometimes it's scary to express myself in that way. So it's just really beautiful to know that that is possible to have a. And even then, I was there by myself. And just being around people that were expressing themselves makes it easier for me too. Like you've said something like that before, where it's like it's a, or somebody said something, where it's like a permission slip to do the same. Like a permission slip to be weird and to move in the way your body wants to. Because sometimes at these events, you're looking funky, and that's the best way to be. And it's just a really good way to, you know, express yourself creatively is through movement. Is like for me, I'm very bodily, somatic. And moving is something that has been very scary for me in ways that are more like visceral. And that's what it's like. The word visceral came to me a lot last night, like over and over and over again. And I looked it up, and I'm just going to share this and I'll wrap up. Visceral, give me a second. I have it right here. Deep, instinctual, and often powerful emotions or feelings that originate from the core of one's being rather than from conscious thought or intellect. So I think that's going to be a word for me to really embody is just this like mixture of primal, intuitive, even sexual energy, like this energy floating around that like we're able to tune into. Like I kept like hearing like and feeling like tuning like an instrument. And it's like whenever you tune it, you make a different sound. So you're able to move into that sound. And it's there for anybody to grab onto and to embody, if you will. So that's all I'm gonna say.
Beautiful. Noemi, thank you so much for those reflections.
Noemi, I just want to add, I want to say two words came for me. Actually, they are for you, which is be seen.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
So we'll hear from Sunny and then Sarah and then John, and then we'll begin to wrap up tonight. Dimple's got to go eat. Hey, Sunny.
Thanks, Brent. Hey,
Hi,
Sunny.
Dimple. Hi, Brent. Thank you both for this beautiful session. And I actually remember, Dimple, I did watch your interview with Brent some weeks back, or at least a good chunk of it. I may have to visit some parts again, but I really loved hearing your story. It's really remarkable. And it got me thinking that and I think souls such as yourself, and it's almost paradoxical to say souls because there's only oneness, right? So there's only, the way I see it, it's really just one consciousness experiencing itself, right? Through fractalized lenses, sort of. But within this Maya, within this illusion, we talk of souls. And I think souls such as yourself are actually very brave. If we think of this earth as a university and all our life experiences as a curriculum in this university, I think souls such as yourself are very brave to choose these kind of experiences from a higher standpoint. And I think actually in that sense you're kind of a wayfarer, right? To show others how to transmute that kind of darkness, being with this, you said almost what, 21 years from the age of 9 to 30, being with that kind of difficult experience, I think you actually show others what is possible, how to alchemize that into something much greater. So yeah, it's just a really remarkable story. There, sometimes there's this perception that people who are victims of this kind of, duplicitous teachers, you see this a lot of people who escape from cults. There's this perception that, oh, they're victims, that they didn't see this, they're kind of naive, that they didn't see the signs early. But I look at it very differently. I think these are actually very strong souls who, in advance of coming to Earth, actually chose the most difficult experiences because they could handle it, because they could alchemize it and serve as teachers for others, right? And that, from what I'm gathering, it seems that you're doing exactly that. You said you're helping women heal from toxic cycles of abuse and traumas. So yeah, I just wanted to express gratitude for sharing your story. It's really beautiful. And my other takeaway from listening to you is that, everything is mixed in this world, both darkness and light. So even with that teacher you mentioned, this false teacher, you mentioned that the one thing you learned is meditating several hours a day, and that was the one practice you stuck with, you said, after you even left this teacher, right? So I think that's kind of a beautiful thing that you're able to take away even that. And so yeah, that was my other takeaway from your story. And I do have a question also, because I don't experience too many mystical experiences in this incarnation. I'm just very interested in learning a lot from others. But I'm curious, because I hear a lot of Kundalini awakenings happening they happen very spontaneously. And I think it's a sign of divine grace. But even though it may seem accidental from the earthly perspective, I don't think anything's really accidental. I feel like everything comes at exactly the right time, right? So I'm curious, was there any final trigger before you had your full-blown Kundalini awakening? In retrospect, do you see that maybe was there some last bout of purification that you did that triggered your Kundalini awakening? I'm curious about that. Yeah.
Thanks. That's an amazing question. Sunny, first of all, thank you. That was a very long compliment, and I'm not gonna take any credit. I'm gonna give it to the mother. I would say my first awakening was actually when I was just 10 years old, because it's like when I actually had this full-blown awakening, this was on the bed which I shared, but I remembered after the awakening that my first awakening was when I was 10, and I was actually on stage dancing. It was an Arabic dance performance. I was dancing, and I had to do this act in the end of the dance, which was where I had to move my head in circles, and all the girls were moving their head only for like 10 seconds, and they stopped, and I was going on and on and on and on, and then something happened. But I never had that memory. I just never knew until my first awakening that I actually recalled, which I just shared, that was my first time. So this was 2016. My next episode was very recent, actually last year, where again I had an awakening, and I was going through another betrayal at that time, and I just don't know what triggers it. Maybe it's the betrayal that triggers it. I just don't know. All I know is she just comes in when we don't even know, when we don't even, we just don't know where else to go. She comes in, she cleanses you, and she's like, move on, next. Here's your next chapter. So I think that's what she did. She pushed me to my next chapter right now. So that was one of my triggers.
Thank you. Yeah, it does seem to accompany kind of difficult experiences, but I think those are the times where there's a lot of transmutation happening, right? That's the periods where there's a lot of growth, so it does make sense that that happens. So,
Yeah, and I also would say that suffering is just a part of the game. We cannot focus on the suffering. We, like the Buddha says, practice the middle way reality. So if we keep focusing on this or that, we need to stay in the middle. And when we are in the middle, you don't actually feel the suffering. And you don't feel so elated either. You're neutral. And that usually happens after the Kundalini. Everything just becomes neutral. You know everything is an illusion. You just see through Maya. is one of my experiences, just that I wanted to share.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Sunny. Thank you so much for your reflections. Very, very well spoken. Thank you. Okay. We'll hear from Sarah and then John, and then we'll start to wind down here. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to add to the feminine, masculine, kind of communication topic. I feel really lucky and grateful to have met my partner who happens to be a graduate of Harvard Divinity School. So he's like very, knowledgeable about all of the different theologies, and yet would probably consider himself an atheist. And me being such a spiritual person, and like being as head chakra activated as I am, and therefore kind of leafy and like I'm floating around in the esoteric often, I do like kind of rely on him to ground me a bit. And him and I have come to this really wonderful conclusion lately that, like Dimple was saying, like women kind of do, we like to talk. It's like our way of processing things. And him and I have come to this wonderful arrangement where, like, he understands that the way I figure out myself and like the world around me is by just kind of like temperature checking via conversation. So, like, it's like asking the questions. And I think to men, sometimes that can feel almost like we're being accusatory, or like we have these underlying assumptions. Like, I think it's easy that it can come off that way. At least that was an experience him and I were having, was that he thought I was like, he's like, why do you want to ask so many questions, kind of thing. And we kind of uncovered that the feminine does require a lot of, I think, information to feel secure and feel like safe in a way, both physically and spiritually. So yeah, just being really open and allowing and being really receptive to the women in your life, and like letting them express themselves how they want to, and not ever capping them off or cutting them off or belittling them. And I also think there is something to a well-nurtured woman is going to make a well-nurtured man. And it's going to be this like beautiful cycle. Takes some work to get there, but like once you land there, it is so, it's like adding gas to a fire. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for sharing about your experience. Very interesting, powerful stuff. Any
Thank you.
reflections, Dimple, before we move on to John? Thanks, Sarah.
I would say thank you. This is exactly what I was trying to say. So, yes, just hear your woman, whoever she is. If it's your mom, sister, just hear her. That's what really keeps it going. And the magic starts then. Thank you, Sarah.
Beautiful. Okay, let's hear from John.
Hey everyone, I'll try to keep this succinct, and I apologize if maybe this is a bigger topic since we're past time and people got to eat. So basically, I've had several different kind of awakenings. I don't know that I don't think that I've had like the full body kind of awakening that I've heard others talk about. But regardless, one of the topics that has come up a lot tonight and something that I've really struggled with is self-expression. So much so that I've really been looking at like blocked and repressed memories as possible reasons why I have such issues, as well as past lives. And I know, Brent, you've talked about the witch wound. It's something that I've explored a bit. And so I'm actually preparing for a plant medicine ceremony at the end of the month to help with these issues, whether it's to uncover blocked memories or kind of like what Sunny, I feel like Sunny's question kind of had to do with it. But basically my question is, what are your thoughts on sort of like, do you believe it's important to realize and understand our traumas and blocks, or just, I think Dimple, you said it, like just get on to the next chapter and I don't need to know the details and history. I'm trying to remain open to not knowing or finding out, but there's definitely a part of me that wants that full picture. So just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Thanks, John. I like your question, and I would say I would point it to Brent. There was a time when I would just binge listen to Brent's podcast. In Brent's podcast, he specifically mentioned about dreams, and he mentioned how when we don't even want to look at certain chapters of our lives, it's gonna come up in dreams because it needs to release. There has to be some form of a release. So is it important for us to look at our trauma? I would say, as a trauma-informed instructor and practitioner, yes, 100%. Because your trauma is going to show up in your relationships, in money, in you being one of the things you mentioned was it's hard for you to, I don't know the word you used, but you mentioned about not being able to be seen, correct? Like it's hard for you to, I forgot the word you mentioned, but it was something to do with expressing yourself or to be visible. You
Yeah,
mentioned.
just basically just self-expression in general.
Yeah. Okay. So self-expression, right? So the answer is yes. Okay. The example that I give is imagine your kitchen has garbage from last 20 years. And you walk into the kitchen, how is it gonna smell like? It's gonna smell disgusting until you pick up the garbage and you throw it out completely. So we have to do that work. We have to look at our traumas, and if we don't, and they're blocked, they will still come up for us in dreams. So I would point to a resource of dreams on Brent's podcast. Like that was one of the things that I was like, okay. This is great. Like a lot of our dreams that come up for us are sometimes because we need to cleanse whatever we need to cleanse in that moment. And our minds are so strong, whatever we need to cleanse, if we want to work on one specific theme for the month or for the week, and we use that question and we go to sleep, all of a sudden we'll get dreams about it. And I would do that if I need to heal a certain part of me, and I can just openly share this. I used to be super insecure about myself. I would say, I'm not beautiful. I have all these scars on my face. Why do I have all these scars? Why am I so insecure? And I would go to sleep and I would say, why am I so insecure? Why am I so insecure? And then I did not get the answer for so many days. And then I would just get dreams, and that would make sense to me. So to make it short, yes, we need to absolutely heal our traumas. Because that's part of us. But that's not who we are. We are just operating out of our traumas not being healed.
Thank you, Dimple. Thank you. Yeah, great wisdom there. It's important that we understand some of the ins and outs of our patterns, of our conditioning. It helps us to make sense of ourselves, contextualize our journeys. And then, of course, there's also a balance, right? We don't want to turn understanding every last detail of our conditioning, our karma, our trauma, our experiences into this big project that we can't move ahead unless we know every last detail, right? There's a balance there. I think a lot of it is also stored in the body, and the body can release it without the mind getting all the details, right? The body can purge and release without us specifically knowing exactly where did this particular emotion or this particular tension in my muscle that's coming up to be released. What is that associated with? Sometimes it's too much. It's too much to know all of that. So a bit of a balance, curiosity and willingness to take a look while also being okay with not being given all the information. But the thing that we don't want to do is pretend that it's not there, or avoid it, or ignore it, or not be open to whatever may come up. And then we trust the body, we trust the psyche to bring up what needs to be brought up. We trust the intelligence within to show us what's necessary. And at one point, I was able to ask inwardly, and I said, show me everything. I want to know everything about my previous lifetimes. I was able to ask any question and get any answer I wanted, it seemed. And this was my question. And then I was told, oh, don't worry, the past, not important. Not important. And I said, no, I want to know. Tell me. And they said, no, not important right now. Be here now. Be here now. And I said, I really want to know about my previous lifetimes. And suddenly I was transported to a very dark scene. It was like a dungeon. It was thunderstorm and lightning, and it was very dark and very eerie. And I just heard the words horrors and calamities. And I said, okay, I got the message. I don't need to know about every last detail of my past lives. I get it. There was horrors, there was calamities. There's a reason that we don't remember. There's a reason that we don't need to dive into all the details of that. It's just a lot, and it's protective when we don't remember all of it. But generally speaking, yeah, there's certain themes that we do need to understand about ourselves, but every last detail, not necessary. At least that's my take on it. Yeah. So thank you all so much. This has been a really great interactive conversation. Dimple, you've brought so much value, so much intuitive wisdom and insight, and relating with us, telling your story, responding to community members. Great question. So thank you so much. Once again, if you'd like to explore more about Dimple and her work, dimplebindra.com is where you can find out more. She's on Instagram as well. She's got a podcast as well. Check it all out. If you've been inspired by her and would like to connect with her for some more, I'm sure there are ways to contact her on her website. Appreciate you all for being here so much. Dimple, I'll give you the floor just to say goodbye as we wind down here.
Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. It was an honor, Brent. So thanks a lot. And I get to hear everyone's perspective and I get to hear your questions. And I would say I did not plan this. The mother planned it and it happened. So thank you. It was an honor being here. Thanks, Brent.
So welcome. Thank you. And thank you all for being here, engaging with one another, supporting one another. I appreciate all of your support. Your donations go a long way for me. Thank you so much. Sharing, commenting, joining us here on the call goes such a long way as well. This is what it's all about. This is what the community is for. We will meet again tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern, for a Kundalini Q&A meeting if you'd like to join. I've got some openings for some one-to-one meetings if you'd like to go deep with me. KundaliniAwareness.org. Check it out. Check it out. And once again, if you're in the Toronto area and would like to meet for an in-person Kundalini Awakening support group, discussion group, send me a line. I'll share some details with you. Much love, everyone. Get some sleep, everyone. Thank you so much for being here with us all. Thank you so much, Dimple. Much love.
Thank you guys. Much love. May the force be with all of you.